We're back. Kathleen, welcome back.
Thank you.
Kathleen wanted to speak a little about a close friend of hers who has a disease that haunted me for a lot of years, and in the back of my mind it's still there because it's something I had, it's something that recurred, it's something that almost 20 years later for me is something that I know can appear anytime, and that's the way this thing works. So Kathleen, what about Marlene?
Okay. I wanted to bring up Marlene today because she is a most extraordinary human being. Most extraordinary. She's my good buddy, and she has melanoma, and it's now in her brain. She has two tumors, and what I'm asking the readers to do is to pray for my dear friend Marlene, and to circulate on media and in churches a requirement to pray for her. When I think of Marlene, I think that when you think about the darkness and the light, Marlene is one on our side. She's in the light. So we cannot afford to lose one of our lights. So please think about Marlene in your prayers and make it known as wide as you can that my friend needs prayers. Thank you.
Are you able to put her whole name out there? Or?
No.
No?
Okay. No.
Oh, it's all right. God, no matter how you understand God,
he knows
understands.
It. He knows her.
And knows who it is. So,
yeah.
So we can do it that way. Mm-hmm. Some people just are more comfortable if they feel it, you know, more personable if they know a last name. As you know, in the programs I'm involved with, most of us haven't got a clue. We love each other, and then someone's, you know, often sick somewhere in some hospital, and we can't even visit because we don't know who they are.
Okay.
We just know them by first names. You know, and I've got people who've known me for 25 years and don't know my last name, you know, so it's...
Really, eh?
Yeah.
There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah,
so you don't yeah. need that last name.
Well, you don't. And then, of course, you're out of the end part, though, for anybody, you know. And we usually find out what to do. But anyway, yeah, folks, if you can pray for Marlene's, put them on your prayer for Marlene. Pray for her and put her on your prayer chains wherever you are. And we know, those of us who pray regular, that those things don't only go to the people who use them. People do circulate different things, and I've found messages that I put out coming back in different ways years and years later, and
really?
I haven't got a clue why or where. And I mean, I've got, you know, like LinkedIn, for instance, almost a couple of thousand people attached to me, and the lion's share of them are ministerial clergy throughout the world, Africa, India, and you know, I've got a lot of places to go, and I think, God willing, I'm going to have to visit most of them posthumously. But,
yeah.
But not because I'm going to die right away, as far as I know. But anyway, just wanted to quickly mention a bit about the differences, you know, between our grief journeys. And as Kathleen reminded me, they're not so different. The timing's just a little different. But because of the basis of this program and my life in recovery circles with the addicted, their families, and now the incarcerated has become our mainstay. But I had this and have had it for a long, long time. So the support systems for my way of life, which includes a lot of other losses. I know, you know, people right away who come to mind. I can think of two couples who have, a single mom and a couple who have lost two children each, you know, to different things. And one lady lost one child in a fire, and another, and the child's brother was murdered later on in life with a baseball bat. So, I mean, you can... You know, you can imagine, and it's interesting, when I had my own grief looking at me in the face, I remembered those things, and it didn't make it any lighter. It didn't do anything other than tell me, and not only are you not alone, Scott, you're not alone right now, because you know these people, they're personal friends, they love you, you love them. I mean, you're supported, and you're gonna, you know, and the best thing you can do is get around support that you know is real. It's not going to be noisy. It's not going to be like we talked about, the way my perception anyway of controlling. They were people who knew that whatever expressions needed to come out of me were the ones they needed to seek after for a while, and not express their own senses of feelings or what they thought I should feel or not feel and so on. And they knew that. And I knew that they knew that. And I knew I could go to these places. And, you know, I was at a meeting when Sean was, was already dead.
And, yes.
As you mentioned in the book there, that, things were, it was a good day. Things were going on. I was talking in a recovery meeting about Sean's growth and purpose and how great he looked a couple of days earlier and all these things in a meeting. Meanwhile, Sean had died and I had spoken to the police officer at 5 o'clock, and when I had a sense I needed to get in touch with Sean, I called, and of course Sean was deceased, but I got them when they were there trying to revive him, and I could hear all everything flying around and all this noise. And I actually told the officer, I said, I could come down there, and I said, but I think whatever it is going on there, you need to get a handle on that, and why don't you, when you get things under control there, call me back. And that person never did, and that's why my story went on for another 5 hours before I learned. But in those 5 hours, we had many discussions of Sean from people who knew and loved him just because their loved ones were going through the same kind of a mess. So it was quite a story in the way it went. But the fact that I had instant support for exactly what I needed and how I needed and all those things made a big difference in our lives. And then Kathleen went on to work in the grieving areas to help other people's, and thus this book, Life Came to a Standstill, her part in that, and so many other things. And that's how her journey. But that year, just to tell anyone who, if there's any way you can learn about these things and read these books and become respectful of those who do have to go through this kind of suffering, you'll know a lot more, and you'll know where to go and how to do things. And if you're in my world, and you're all in my world, whether you like it or not, because nobody doesn't know somebody who knows somebody who's terribly affected, and the one who you know who knows, their suffering causes you to suffer. So we all need to work on a recovery from those kinds of things, and that's what I do. And, as much as we all need it, Kathleen had that year to kind of super grieve, if you will, while she was making decisions as to where she could go to get some help. And maybe you want to
I think you came up with a very good idea about why wait till you lose someone to read about mourning and grieving. And that's a very good idea. And you can pick up any book on this and learn it so that you're actually educated on it for when the time comes that you can be of service to someone else. So that was, something that you said, and I thought, wow, that's a really good idea. We're always waiting for events to happen before we do anything, but why not get ahead of the curve here? For me, it was a hard journey because when Sean died, I had never had a significant loss. Though my parents had died, I do not consider them to be significant loss because of the type of relationship I had with my family. When Scott's sister died, that was probably my first rather significant loss, but I wasn't part of the family anymore, so I wasn't part of the grieving of that family. So when Sean died, I had never really experienced something that personal, that horrible, and as I said, I cried, and kind of, I was like in a boat without a rudder. It was like wherever I would just, whatever I could obtain and help, I would go. And eventually I connected with Bereaved Families of York after 3 months, and I had one meeting, and then I thought, I'm not ready for this. And it was only a year later that I was able to connect with them again and start, I think almost a year before I started programs. So all along you had been using your program because you were familiar with it and it works. And for me, there was no program that I was familiar with that I could actually hook myself into. But I did get therapists. Like, that was real. My doctor, when my doctor, I must talk about my family doctor briefly, he was a significant help to me. He actually did help me to get through the initial few months, and finally I hopped on to having a therapist, and that kind of led me to Bereaved Families of York Region.
Mm-hmm. Just quickly, where can people get this book that you took part in? And what's the name of the author?
The author is Gwendolyn Broadmore.
Okay.
And again, it's Life Came to a Standstill. And I think it's available on Amazon, actually.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'm sure if you search that, folks, you can find that book. A lot of real interesting stories in there, different people, their journeys, and that. And as Kathleen mentioned, there's other literature out there. Read up on it. Get familiar. And one other thing that I didn't mention, I'd been working in hospice for many years when you know, my sister died in 2000, and my girlfriend at that time, Doris, said the way you seem to be able to sort of hold her in your arms and present her to God and then walk away feeling really good watching the changeover and so on, maybe you should get involved in that, and I did. So I also had 10 years of that under my belt,
yeah.
You know, by the time we lost him. Nothing compares in any sense but to that trauma around hearing that and experiencing, but the grieving process, I think, was very different and in many respects a lot easier.
Yeah.
For me, and I don't know why that is, and I think it's
your experience. Yeah, an experience.
Yeah.
If
probably,
you had
probably.
Experience with Heather's death, which was very significant to you, and then you have the significant loss of Sean, you already have experience if you've grieved Heather properly, and you did.
Yeah.
And then you had your program. So
I had the 10 people I spent time with in between those two. So anyway, we're going to have to do a wrap here. And thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you.
Sean, God bless you. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
We'll be with you in every respect possible. And, you know, coming to see you. I don't know how soon. And in many ways, I don't want to be too soon. But otherwise, I can't wait. But so, folks, Scott with Kathleen saying hey, we're gone for another week, sharing the burden of life here on 102.9 FM. Help us put some meetings together in and around Stouffville. Just connect with us through sharingtheburden.ca. You'll find us, I'm sure. And I think, Jay, we're about done for the day. Have you got any quick news on your show before we hammer out here?
Yeah, might as well promote my show. It's called the Block Party on Saturday night here on Whistle FM. Tune in 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Saturdays. We have some great DJs, got some great artists coming up on the show throughout May and June. So stay tuned for the Block Party here on Whistle FM.
Thanks all for listening to Sharing the Burden live on 102.9 FM here in Stouffville. Please go to sharingtheburden.ca for this and previous broadcasts. Hope you enjoyed the show and hope you will share it online. Till we meet again, this is Scott saying, have a great day.